This is a CJLO production.
From the greatest city in the world, Montreal, Quebec, this, my friends, on CJLO is Liberty in Exile.
I ask you to join me in helping restore the individual freedoms and initiatives this nation once knew, to make government more the servant and not the master of us all. In this free nation, we do not choose to be ruled. We elect to be governed.
In your heart, you know he's right.
Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. I come to bring you liberty, not destroy it. The evil that governments do lives after them. The good is often interred with their bones. So let it be with liberty and exile. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm your host once again, Yael Ososki, guiding Santa's sleigh through pseudo-reality. The number here at CJLO is 514-848-7471. Our website is libertyinexile.wordpress.com. That's libertyinexile.wordpress.com. There we have the show blog, the Twitter feed, all the links, the podcasts, the videos, and more. And it's all offered to you free of charge. I would also like to take the time to announce that the brand new iTunes podcast is available in the iTunes store. Fortunately, my friends, we've had record hits of Liberty in Exile podcast the last few days, so we've had to upgrade servers to better serve those loyal fans and curious minds. Okay, enough for self-promotion. Today is the 19th of March, 2010, for your day in history, as I always do. On this day in 1915, the now dwarf planet Pluto is photographed for the first time. 1918, the U.S. Congress approves daylight savings time, and 1944, Nazi forces occupy Hungary. That is your day in history for this, the 19th of March, 2010. I'd like to slide through the headlines that are going through this morning. Of course, the Israeli rift is all in the news. The settlements that are being built in Israel being looked upon with a furious eyebrow by the United States government, and Netanyahu is calling Hillary Clinton today to defuse the tensions. That is Huffington Post. On Drudge and other sites, of course, it's talking about the health care bill and how they will be trying to pass that this Sunday. They're trying to tally up the votes as fast as they can. Yeah, I guess if you're following the news very closely on that, you're going to be very upset. The mistake that I think they do with these things is they show the public what the bills are, what the entire process is, and truth be told, the average Joe Blow does not know the average process to pass a bill in the United States House of Representatives or the United States Senate. Therefore, whenever he hears of this bill, he expects everything to be passed diligently, fast, everything goes through, signed. That's not how it works. Normally, it takes about a year for a bill to go through. Anyone can tell you that. Okay, now this week was a very interesting week. The last few days are normally my favorite of the year. Of course, 3.14, that was March, Pi Day, 14th of March, 3.14159265 4, celebrating that mathematical anomaly. 15th, of course, the Ides of March, the death day of Caesar. Very important for all those historians out there. 16th was the birthday of Keeley. Happy birthday. 17th, St. Patrick's Day. Oh, we've had quite a fun time, but there's also another story that played. I heard it on the news, very surprised. It actually almost scared me.
A daring St. Patrick's Day bank heist turned deadly Wednesday when two suspects were shot dead, including one who was dressed as a leprechaun. Police say the leprechaun-dressed man held up a Nashville bank at gunpoint and made off with a bag of cash before leaving the scene in a getaway car. Officers followed, and they say the suspects opened fire. They later ditched the car and ran into a field where two of them were killed during a shootout.
I don't know if anyone else finds that hilarious, but I did. Okay. Now, a few articles I'm looking at today. New York Times. This has to do with states' rights. Title of the article is, States' Rights is Rallying Cry for Lawmakers. This was published the 16th of March. Whether it's correctly called a movement, a backlash, or political theater, state declarations of their rights, or in some cases denunciations of federal authority, amounting to the same thing, are on a roll. Governor Mike Rounds of South Dakota, a Republican, signed a law on Friday declaring that the federal regulation of firearms is invalid if a weapon is made and used in South Dakota. On Thursday, Wyoming's governor, Dave Freudenthal, a Democrat, signed a similar bill for that state. The same exact day, Oklahoma's House of Representatives approved a resolution that Oklahomans should be able to vote on a state constitutional amendment allowing them to opt out of the federal health care overhaul. In Utah, lawmakers embraced states' rights with a vengeance in the final days of the legislative session last week. One measure said Congress and the federal government could not carry out health care reform, not in Utah anyway, without approval of the legislator. Another bill declared state authority to take federal lands under the eminent domain process. A resolution asserted the inviolable sovereignty of the state of Utah under the 10th Amendment to the Constitution. Now, as the New York Times is covering here, states are doing their duty as they're supposed to underneath our Constitution and asserting their authority, their sovereignty. The states created the federal government. That's how it was supposed to work. But now, somehow, it's run the other way, and the federal government has more power. Just like here in Canada, it was the central government that created the country, but now the provinces have more power. It's as if we've passed each other in time, wouldn't you say? But I'm very proud of all these lawmakers coming out and coming in support of states' rights. Now, those who oppose the entire notion of states' rights try to tie it to the Civil War, who say, well, civil rights, that's all about trying to secede, all about wanting to make Confederate States of America. Well, my friend, it goes back much farther than that. When they were first forming the United States of America, Virginia did not want to pay the debts, did not want to assume the debts of all the other colonies at that time. That was states' rights. It was asserting its own right as a state. Because if not, what is it for? Is it like the provinces in the early Roman Empire? I should hope not. But I'm very happy this is going through. Because now the states will begin to push the federal government out, which they have been doing. They've been doing it a great deal. They've been doing it through firearms. They've been doing it through medical marijuana. They've been doing it through all sorts of memorandums, they've been doing through drug possession, all sorts of things that are priorities of the state governments. But the federal governments have come in and taken that black marker and marked their territory, apparently. Now, this brings up the point of nullification and the like, where states can nullify federal laws, which has been done, Fugitive Slave Act. It's been done way before that, before the Civil War. Once again, I'm proud this is going on. Now, my next article that I'm going to be focusing on is from the Washington Times. Government workers feel no economic pain. Uh-oh. Quoting from the article, the recession and the ongoing jobless recovery devastated much of the private sector workforce last year, sending unemployment soaring, but government workers emerged essentially unscathed, according to data released Wednesday by the Labor Department. Meanwhile, the compensation for state and local government employees continued to easily outdistance the wages and benefits for workers in private business, a separate Labor Department report showed. Private industry employers spent an average of 27.42 per hour worked for total employee compensation in December, while total compensation costs for state and local workers averaged 39.60 per hour. The average government wage and salary per hour of 26 and 11 cents was 35% higher 35% higher than the average wage and salary of $19.41 per hour in the private sector. But the percentage difference in benefits was much higher. Benefits for state and local workers averaged $13.49 per hour, nearly 70% higher than the $8 per hour in benefits paid by private business. Now, if we understand the model of Greece, we understand the model of Iceland, and all other countries that are failing right now, this is unsustainable. You cannot pay your public sector workers more than your private sector workers. That does not work. That goes against economics, rule 1 to 5, to 35 to 3,000. The government does not have the money to be paying more to these employees. I'm not discrediting what they do. Most of these employees work hard, day in and day out. But if private sector employees are getting pay cuts across the board, which they are in almost all aspects and all industries except Wall Street finance, public sector employees should be expected to take a hint as well. I have another article that I just actually found kind of interesting. It's from the Associated Press. A North Carolina woman gets $9 million in alienation of affection suit. This is in Greensboro, North Carolina. A jury has awarded a North Carolina woman $9 million from her husband's lover after ruling the other woman ruined her marriage. The News and Record of Greensboro reports the jury ruled this week in 60-year-old Cynthia Shackelford's alienation of affection case. North Carolina is one of a handful of states that allows jilted spouses to sue over affairs. Shackelford says her husband was a Greensboro attorney, and he started an affair before separating from her in April 2005. Now, wow, this is just an interesting story. I came across it going through the news wires. $9 million! Woo! Well, I guess that is a clue to all you mistresses and home wreckers. I have an article here. It's a specialty article from Campaign for Liberty. It has to do with GMO corporatism. Now, this is something that I really have not talked about a lot and is not talked about a lot in the media because most of the large food companies and the companies who go under this process do a lot of advertising on television, on radio, in the print, everywhere. So any articles that come out against companies like Monsanto and DuPont and the like who are doing this normally are going to get shot down, and there's a lot of documentaries you can watch on this. There's Food Inc., The Future of Food. Check out these documentaries. It's very important because the next revolution is the food revolution. Now, the number one company right now for all food in the world, I hope you know that, one company rules over 60% of all the food that's manufactured in the world. It is Monsanto. This company started patenting seeds now, and it's won court battles to where they can own entire seed species, which also means that organisms can be patented. So now there are patents that companies are buying for organisms and species that A, they either create, or B, they just happen to patent before anyone else. Now, GM food, that basically means that you're going in and you're changing the genes. This is genomics. It's a very important field that's been talked about a lot by Juan Enriquez. He has a lot of books. He's a professor at Harvard who's been an advocate. He's given speeches at TED. He's written plenty of articles. And he talks about the great things that are going to happen with this GMO food. They say it's going to be higher crop yield, more people will be fed. But what he does not look at is most people are getting sick, because they change the genes in these foods so they can be resistant to pesticides. So they can grow these wherever, and if weeds grow, they shoot Roundup everywhere, and the plants don't die. Now, we're playing with the genetic structure here. We're playing with the DNA, deoxyribonucleic acid. What do we expect to happen? And we put all that in the hands of one company, Monsanto. Now, I only have a small article on this issue, but there are many more available on the internet. I urge all of you to do the research. Know where your food comes from. Buy locally. Don't buy that stuff in the grocery store with high fructose corn syrup with the big 15,000 ingredients. No. If you want pure food, you only need 2 or 3 ingredients. That's all you need. Beware of this company. All right, this is CJLO Radio, 1690 AM. I'm your host, Yael Lasoski of Liberty in Exile. Got to pay the bills, so I'll be playing a few ads. We'll be right back after these messages.
The Bellevue, that's it. I mean, sometimes you just ain't all.
I want you to take me where I belong, where hearts have been broken with a kiss and a song. Spend the rest of my days, dear, without any care. Everyone understands me in the valley of tears. Soft words have been spoken, so sweet and low, but my mind is made up, and I must go. Spend the rest of my days, dear, without any care. Everyone understands me in the valley of tears.
That was Buddy Holly, Valley of Tears. Got a few other articles I'd like to jump through today. This is coming from Reuters. China calls U.S. a hypocrite over human rights. Oh no. China accused Washington of hypocrisy on Friday for its criticism of Beijing's restrictions on the internet and dissent, blaming the United States for the financial crisis and saying its own rights record was terrible. In its annual survey of human rights in 194 countries issued on Thursday, the United States State Department criticized China along with Cuba, Myanmar, North Korea, and Russia. Here's a quote coming from China's State Council Information Office. The United States not only has a terrible domestic human rights record, but also has the main source of many human rights disasters worldwide. Especially at a time when the world is suffering, caused by the global financial crisis sparked by the United States' subprime crisis. The United States government has ignored its own grave human rights problems and reveled in accusing other countries. Now, that's an interesting article coming from Reuters. China is calling us hypocrites. Now, I really don't have much information to battle that. I'm sorry. I have nothing to say with that. Now, we're going to go on to, of course, questions about the Fed. I try to cover the Federal Reserve, what it does, what it sneakily, under the covers, under the shadows of government, tries to basically spread across the world. And we know that the Fed has been involved in the bailouts in Greece, in the European Union, and more. We look forward to many more. Well, not I, but here's, this is coming from AP.
Engaged in the balance sheet. This raises serious.
Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke is urging Congress to let the Fed keep all of its banking oversight.
The Federal Reserve's participation in the oversight of banks of all sizes significantly improves its ability to carry out its central banking functions, including making monetary policy, lending through the discount window, and fostering financial stability.
Bernanke's testimony comes as new legislation seeks to strip the Fed of its power to supervise thousands of state-chartered banks and hundreds of bank holding companies. That would leave the Fed with 35 of the biggest bank holding companies under its supervision. Bernanke said such a move would limit the central bank's ability to control the economy.
Notably, the Federal Reserve's role as a supervisor of state member banks of all sizes, including community banks, offers insights about conditions and prospects across the full range of financial institutions, not just the very largest, and provides useful information about the economy and financial conditions throughout the nation.
While the legislation would narrow the Fed's authority, it would also extend new powers to allow the central bank to oversee large and interconnected financial firms like AIG and GE Capital. Mark Hamrick, The Associated Press.
Now, any of us who follow the news, follow the financial matters of the times, you know the Federal Reserve has been manipulating these interest rates a very long time. Now, there's news that just came out the other day based on this. Let's hear it again. Reuters.
The Fed says it is staying the course, keeping interest rates at close to zero, adding that it will continue to do so for an extended period of time. Rates have been at this level since December of 2008.
Now, if you've read a couple of economists here in the past few weeks, you know that the entire financial meltdown, if you look at it, if you look at the interest rates, if you look at the currency, if you look at those who print the money and cause inflation, we know that it all comes from the Federal Reserve. Now, they've been keeping these interest rates very, very low. Now, you don't have to be an expert in economics here. Okay, I believe that the entire field of world economics has been taken to this upper level when really it's very simple. All right, they've done this on purpose because the layman is not going to pay attention when the economic news comes on, except recession, unemployment, and things of that nature. So if you understand the figures and you understand the reasons behind it, the policies, who actually puts that out, you can start to understand a lot of the economic policy and basically a lot of its faults as well. Now, when they keep these interest rates very low, of course, what does that mean? That means that people are saving money. People are keeping money in the bank. Therefore, it is an incentive to invest more. Now, as we know now, people are not saving their money. More people are in debt right now. And with this false reality that they're trying to create, where they're artificially keeping these interest rates low, there's only been one Western country that actually let interest rates rise, and that was Australia. It's the only smart central bank as of this moment. Now, with these, the Federal Reserve can lend money out to Goldman Sachs at 0.1% interest, and then Goldman Sachs lends that money back to the United States federal government at over 25%, 12%, 20%. I mean, it varies on a day, but that's how it works. That's how your currency is created here in the United States. I hope you know. Do some research on that, ladies and gentlemen. It is very interesting. But basically, we have this Ben Bernanke, of course, who's head of the Federal Reserve, comes from Dillon, South Carolina, good southern boy. Now he's mixed up, basically, controlling the world, actually. There have been arguments who say that because he controls the base currency for the world and the reserve currency for all financial transactions, he basically is at the behest of no one. He is the central banker of the world. That is Ben Bernanke. Now, when people are over-investing, as apparently they're supposed to do with these low interest rates, it's going to create a bubble. Now, if you don't know anything about economics, you do know one thing about the boom-bust cycle. You've heard that. It's a perpetual thing. Boom-bust, boom-bust, boom-bust. And it's always been created by the Federal Reserve, because the Federal Reserve will lower the interest rates here, will overprint money in this area, and that's what we're doing right now, printing way too much money that we don't have and we have to lend from China and Japan. Now, this is a very important ordeal. It leads me to an article from Bloomberg. US-UK move closer to losing rating, Moody's says. The United States and the UK have moved substantially closer to losing their AAA credit ratings at the cost of servicing their debt, according to Moody's Investor Service. The governments of the two economies must balance bringing down their debt burdens without damaging growth by removing fiscal stimulus too quickly. Now, this AAA rating, if you don't understand it, it's okay, but it basically means that this government, its treasury bills, they work. You can invest. They will pay everything back. They're responsible. And we're about to lose this AAA rating. AAA means we are the best economy of the world. It means that we shall pay all of our treasury bills in due time. But as Moody's is reporting here, that AAA rating will squeak down. It'll be a AA rating. Do you want a AA rating? I surely don't. You know who has a AA rating? Most of the countries in Europe, because they can't pay the bills. Now, this is big news coming from Bloomberg. I also have an article from the Times Online. Curb your spending, Brussels tells Gordon Brown. Gordon Brown was dealt an embarrassing blow last night when Brussels gave a warning that Britain must do more to curb its spiraling debt. The European Commission wants Labour to outline further spending cuts and spell out where the axe shall fall. Now, this is another example of sovereignty. We see the European Union, which was created without the consent of the Europeans, just the elites who govern the entire region, is telling the UK to stop spending money. So that's basically what you're going to have, is a higher authority telling you what to do. He doesn't need a writ of certiorari. He doesn't need any sort of legal principle. They just say, do this now. We are your leader. You are insubordinate. And that's exactly what will happen if we submit to these higher governments and higher authorities, like the World Bank, like the International Monetary Fund. And they're starting the North American Union here in the next 2 or 3 years. That's not reported very much in the United States, but it is reported in Canada. This prosperity partnership that they're talking about. The North American Union will have one currency across all the borders. Everyone says, oh, there'll be free trade, it'll be amazing. It'll be the same thing as in the European Union. You ask any European right now, what's good about it? They'll only say one thing. You can go back and forth without showing your passport. That's it. That's the only thing you gain. Now your taxes go to some far-off government, and they spend it wherever they want, not held accountable. You only have to re-elect these guys every 4 years. Not a model I believe we should follow. Now, talking about International Monetary Fund and the World Bank, Iraq apparently has signed a deal with the World Bank. This is coming from Agence France-Presse. Iraq has signed an agreement to receive the first of two $250 million loans from the World Bank to help the country plug its budget deficit, the finance ministry said Thursday. The announcement came after 3 weeks. After 3 weeks, the International Monetary Fund approved a $3.6 billion dollar loan to the war-torn country. $3.6 billion loan to the war-torn country. Now, this shows another pattern where the United States will intervene into a country, just like it has in Latin America. Then the World Bank will come in, give them loans, jack up the interest rates, and they'll be paying that the rest of their existence. Just look at what's happening right now in Haiti. They own $1 billion in fees, which the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund, I will say, after a lot of pressure from France and the United States and other countries, did cancel that debt. But it just shows you the pattern. It shows you what happened. This World Bank, who's not elected, who's just a bunch of international bankers, no affiliations, no countries, no flags, only dollar signs, go into countries, lend you money, charge you interest, and you go bust because you can't pay for it. Now, that's against every major religion we have here in the West, whether it be Islam or Christianity or Judaism. Charging interest like that is unjust. There's a reason that in all the holy books, they come out against it. And we're doing the same thing to Iraq, who has a budget deficit of $19.6 billion, 27.1% of total expenditure. Now, where's all that oil money I thought they had? Apparently, it is 85% of their government, but $20 billion. My goodness. Harp on that, ladies and gentlemen. This is CGLO 1690 AM, Liberty Next Isle. I'm your host, Ayala Soski. We'll be right back after we pay the bills with these messages.
1690 AM on CGLO.
welcome back. That was Shortwave. Shortwave with Esther. Great song. I found that CD just sitting out here of CJLO, so I picked it up. Now I've got a few more articles, once again, to go over with you. One is an interesting one from the New York Observer that I read. Now this, I want all of you to go to my website, libertyinexile.wordpress.com, and actually read this article. Go through it, because you shall be amazed. This is honestly one of the... I haven't read an article like this in at least 2 or 3 months. It's relating to, of course, the war on terror, 9/11. All right, here we go. This is from the New York Observer, The Gay Terrorist. It's been more than 8 years since 9/11, but the fallout continues to reverberate throughout today's New York. The Obama administration's waffling over how to try Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the attack's mastermind, and the continuous embarrassing delay in rebuilding the towers downtown have kept 9/11 more in the headlines than usual. Now, as those political battles roll on, a new story about the run-up to 9/11 has emerged. A previously undisclosed, covert CIA effort to recruit a spy to penetrate Al-Qaeda a year and a half before the planes crashed into the towers. The development is intriguing in part because the informant they were after was thought to be secretly gay, a fact that gave intelligence agents leverage in their efforts to turn him against his conservative Islamist circle. But the case may also help answer one of the long-standing mysteries of the 9/11 narrative. Why a terrorist, known to one part of the United States government, wasn't captured by other parts before he boarded a plane and helped to carry out one of the most devastating attacks on the country. Intelligence officials tell The Observer that the character at the center of the intrigue was an enigmatic but jovial man named Ahmad Hikmat Shakir, or Shakir el-Iraqi. He was tall as a mushroom, fat and gay, one source familiar with the case told The Observer, and the idea was to exploit him as a case against Al-Qaeda. The CIA's pursuit of Mr. Shakir and the role he could have played in stopping or at least complicating the 9/11 plot is a story that's never been told, adding yet another piece in the puzzle leading up to the attacks. Now, as you all know, I do not delve into conspiracy much here on Liberty in Exile. I have at times, but with 9/11 I've been hands-off. There are many questions yet unanswered, but this article from the New York Observer is telling us that the CIA had a mole in Al-Qaeda who's with them when they were planning their attacks in Florida, when they were planning their attacks in Arizona, when they were all these places. He was staying with these people. He worked for the CIA, but it turns out the CIA just didn't tell the FBI. Didn't tell the FBI, and then after that, 3,000 Americans died in plane attacks in New York, in Washington, D.C., and in Pennsylvania. Now, the CIA knew about this. They had a mole in there. They had this Mr. Shakir el-Iraqi. Tall as a mushroom, fat and gay. Who was a mole working for the CIA and in Al-Qaeda. This is in New York Observer. Please go to my website, libertyinexile.wordpress.com. Send this article out to your friends, to everyone you know who is interested in this, of course, who can actually make a difference, because this is a key article, and I believe this is a key investigation that we should follow up on. And we'll try to here on Liberty in Exile, as we always do. I have another article from The Star Online. Iran arrests 30 over U.S.-linked cyber ring agency. Here's another case of the United States meddling in the affairs of Iran by actually funding these hacker groups. Iran has arrested 30 people suspected of belonging to a U.S.-linked cyber network gathering information on Iranian nuclear scientists and sending people abroad for training, a news agency reported on Saturday. It said the group sought to recruit people through the internet for training in Iraq with the People's Mujahideen Organization, a leftist exile group which launched attacks on the Islamist Republic from Saddam Hussein's Iraq. Now, once again, I have no doubt CIA is behind this. Once again, meddling in affairs, funding things. What can we expect? Goes on and on. I'd like to go on a little bit to the terror state. Terror state! This is an article from Fox News, not the greatest source, but an interesting article nonetheless. Terrorist targeting children via Facebook, Twitter. The internet grew 20% uglier last year, with terrorists and racists increasingly turning to social media sites such as Facebook and Twitter and targeting children, finds the 2010 Digital Hate Report. The CD-ROM report put out annually by the Simon Wiesenthal Center for Tolerance, which I actually looked up, and it's mostly tied with trying to spread knowledge of the Holocaust and the like. Thought I'd do some research on that. Aims to assist law enforcement, public officials, educators and parents, and the news media to better grasp the scope of hate. The report, based on some 11,500 problematic websites, social networks, chat forums, Twitter posts, other internet postings, found that hate-filled language is increasingly filling social networks. In compiling it, researchers for the Wiesenthal Center found such disturbing online content as video footage showing bomb-making instructions and hate games, including one about bombing Haitian earthquake victims. The report found a 20% increase in hate-filled social networks, websites, forums, blogs, Twitter feeds, and so on. It notes that beyond its role in our social lives, the internet often acts as the incubator and validator of dangerous conspiracy theories surrounding 9/11 and Oregon theft. Now, I have no doubt that this study is a front, basically meant as carte blanche to the legislators to pass any sort of law they want, censoring the internet, because what else? We've seen these calls for cybersecurity. I reported that last week in The Guardian. Cybersecurity, that's the number one call. NATO wants to stop it. The United States government wants to stop it. Canadian government wants to stop it. Even the United Nations would like to stop it. Cybersecurity. Cyber terrorism. The call to end all. That's what they say. Now, to me, this just seems like another grab. Another grab to try to control the information, because as we know right now, the internet is the freest market, the freest domain that we have as citizens. It's not being in tune with the corporate-constructed media, the corporate-funded newspapers and the like. It's actually going into the internet, into the free world, the free market, and getting your information free of influence. Now, of course, all authorities in charge do not like this. They don't like you getting your news. They don't like you being educated. They like to keep the populace low. Now, this freedom to go out, divulge into information, learn about things, is very important in all societies. We should protect it. That is why we have our laws and our rights. This relates to a story I have from Reuters about Afghanistan and the media situation there. Now, we went there to liberate Afghanistan from the Taliban, who helped harbor al-Qaeda. Now, I'm just quoting. That's all I'm doing. But in this, they said that the Taliban, terrible people, who actually were the Mujahideen and the United States funded and put into power. Well, we won't talk about that. We went to rid Afghanistan of these terrible people who were keeping the people down. And now an article comes out. Afghanistan eases ban on news coverage of raids. Afghanistan rowed back on Saturday from a total ban on media broadcasts of disturbing images from insurgent attacks or live pictures of security operations. The new rules for media were agreed over the past week after an outcry over restrictions imposed on March 1st by the National Directorate of Security spy agency that threatened to arrest journalists who film attacks. Freedom of the press? Not in Afghanistan. The NDS had imposed the ban on international as well as local media, saying the images emboldened the militants and allowed them to gain tactical information. The move outraged Afghan media and rights groups who said the public would be deprived of vital security information. Wow, 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 wow. Now, if you think the governments are there to guarantee freedom from censorship, guarantee freedom of the press, you are wrong. They're only there to limit it, as they have done in wartime and all times. Right? As we covered last week with our guest, John McLaughlin, we talked about the New York Times suppressing stories about Pakistan and Talibani officials and these new officials that they kill every day that come out of nowhere. The New York Times received a call from the White House, from Robert Gibbs, from Obama himself, not quite sure, saying, please suppress this story. Vital information could be lost. Please don't let it go. Now, freedom of the press should be guarded. It's a sanctity of our institution, the fourth estate, as it is supposed to be. We should protect it, by all means. This is CGLO, 69 AM, Liberty in Exile. I'm your host, Daniel Ososki. We'll be right back after these messages.
A career nowhere near ordinary. It's within reach. Find out more at rcmp.ca. A message from the Government of Canada.
was Buffalo Creek String Band with Elkhorn Dance, one of my favorite songs. That, of course, is a amazing group from Concord, North Carolina. Please listen up. They have an awesome MySpace page. You can listen to all their music. Got a few other articles. Don't have much time here. It is 10:48 here in Montreal, Quebec. I have an article here from the Associated Press. Headline, Break the Law and Your New Friend May Be the FBI. The feds are on Facebook and MySpace, LinkedIn, and Twitter, too. U.S. law enforcement agents are following the rest of the internet world into popular social networking services, going undercover with false online profiles to communicate with suspects and gather private information, according to an internal Justice Department document that offers a tantalizing glimpse of issues related to privacy and crime fighting. Think you know who's behind that friend request? Think again. Your new friend just may be the FBI. The document obtained in a Freedom of Information Act lawsuit makes clear that U.S. agents are already logging on surreptitiously to exchange messages with suspects, identify targets, friends, or relatives, and browse private information such as postings, personal photographs, and video clips. As I've warned you many times on this show before, please make sure all your online profiles are private. Otherwise, you shall be exploited, whether it be by government or big business, either one or the other. Now, why are they going online trying to find all these people? It's just another link, right? It's another way to come into our lives and find all the lawmakers and the lawbreakers. Now, once again, government is overstepping its reach. This should be ruled unconstitutional. There hasn't been any large case by the Supreme Court yet, but I anticipate one at least in the next 3 years. And the Supreme Court right now has more liberal voices, so hopefully we'll get that protection that we all need and deserve through our natural rights. I have an article here from the National Post. This highlights a point that I've actually covered before in other articles. It was in Mother Jones. It's also been in California a lot. It has to do with roadside DUI checks. The article says here, Tories revive random roadside breath test. The Harper government appears ready to move ahead with imposing random roadside breath testing, which a new federal discussion paper says has produced remarkable results in catching drunk drivers in other countries. The proposal has encountered skepticism, however, with civil liberties proponents warning that new legislation could give police the power to detain drivers without reasonable grounds or suspicion. Of course, that is illegal. Here they go on. The reality is that it creates a bit of a police state mentality in which an innocent person can be subjected to a whole host of testings, said Edward Prosciutti, a Toronto criminal lawyer. One's going to have to put an awful lot of faith in the typical officer on the road, because they're going to be given a dramatically expanded discretion. Basically, absolute carte blanche to stop anyone, anywhere, anytime, and demand breath alcohol testing. Empowering police to conduct random tests would replace 40-year-old legislation, which says the breathalyzer can be administered only when there is reasonable suspicion of drunk driving. Now, this is a trend. Once again, another trend. The police state has descended down upon us, ready to go into your pockets, into your cars, at any checkpoint across North America. Now, this is the Harper government coming out in favor of it. It's already done in California, done in Louisiana, done across the United States, and all of North America, so please beware out there on the road. Now, there's one part of this article that I found extremely disheartening. I saw this, and I almost flipped out. Here it goes. There's a new act in Ontario, for example, which allow police to hand out automatic 3-day license suspensions to drivers who register blood alcohol concentrations below the legal limit of 0.08, but above 0.05. While these suspensions are not criminal in nature, they go on a driver's record and can affect insurance rates. So now they're doing this warning range of 0.05 to 0.08. You can't drink any alcohol from that to that. And anyone who has had any and has had to blow into a breathalyzer, you know that that's only about 3 or 4 drinks. If you drink more than that, they'll put you in the slammer. You get a 3-day suspension on your license. It goes on your insurance is jacked up, and all goes to Fahuli. Thank you, government. I have one last article from Agence France-Presse. Brain scan can read people's thoughts. This has to do, again, with the police state and how they are going to be using this to catch all criminals across the world, because apparently we all are terrorists.
The following message is brought to you by TalkSport and the Anti-Terrorist Hotline. The man at the end of the street doesn't talk to his neighbours much, because he likes to keep himself to himself. He pays with cash because he doesn't have a bank card. And he keeps his curtains closed because his house is on a bus route. This may mean nothing, but together, it could all add up to you having suspicions. We all have a role to play in combating terrorism. If you see anything suspicious, call the confidential anti-terrorist hotline on 0800 789 321. If you suspect it, report it.
You just might be a terrorist. That comes all the way out from the United Kingdom. Thank you for that. Now, this article is from Agence France-Presse, like I mentioned earlier. A scan of brain activity can effectively read a person's mind, researchers said Thursday. British scientists from University College London found they could differentiate brain activity linked to different memories and thereby identify thought patterns by using functional magnetic resonance imaging, fMRI. The evidence suggests researchers can tell which memory of a past event a person is recalling from the pattern of their brain activity alone. Now, this is a breakthrough going on in the United Kingdom. Once again, they are the beacon of all progress, apparently. But we have this. Now they have an entire system where they can actually read your thoughts through memories. Now, I'm not saying this is being used for bad purposes yet, but you just wait. Any technology that is out there right now, scientifically, militarily, anything of the sort, we have to imagine that it's three times greater or more underneath the government sphere. That is to say that the military technology that we have now in public dwarfs that of the private military contractors. We've seen that. That's in Blackwater. That's in Z. That's in any of these private companies that do operate in Afghanistan and Iraq and have a mandate from the American government and get paid billions of dollars doing it. The American people never sign the check, but they do have guaranteed contracts. And all their technology that they have is superior, and this has been reported. They do the test in Nevada. They have the places in Iraq and Afghanistan where they try out these small little devices on prisoners and the like, disgusting things. But that is enough about that. As has been only briefly examined and resumed today, we occupy the time and space of the pseudo-terror debt police state. We are reminded of such when examining the trends and realities of the content of modern journalism, always keying in on the false notions of exceptionalism, terror, and turmoil. Truth be told, we do not live in a violent society. Rather, we are ruled over by a violent, tyrannical association of men known as government. For those that doubt, they need not look beyond what we have explored today. Our money is created by a private central bank known as the Federal Reserve that rewards its cronies and favor banks with luxurious bailouts and credit allowances, while the majority of the citizenry beholden to pay cuts and systematic purges of employment. Ballooning public debts continue to pay higher wages to government employees, an easy breach of fundamental economics, and a foreshadowing for the debt-ridden conditions that have already plagued Iceland, Greece, the European Union, and the like. Real unemployment stands above 20%, while corporate-funded government economists try to convince the working poor that the success of Wall Street is good for all, when only the elite shall profit. Governments are doing all they can to rob their citizens of capital, whether it be through roadside checkpoints, red light cameras, increased fees and licenses, or the continual sacrificing of citizens' liberties by way of the false drug war. Judges and police officers bend to the will of private police prison complex, bustling with non-violent offenders and a newly counted prison population. A population which dwarfs that of communist China. More proxy wars are initiated, killing millions of innocents across all continents and all specters of life. We cannot let this continue, my friends. We cannot be the generation that allows this to occur once more. We need to be the change. We need to go in there and change everything, all preconceived notions. Because if we don't, our failure awaits us. That is it for Liberty in Exile. this Friday, the 19th of March, 2010. I'm your host, Yael Ososki. Check out our website, libertyinexile.wordpress.com, as I leave you with the words of Lyndon Johnson. Have a great weekend, everyone.
I do not believe that I should devote an hour or a day of my time to any personal partisan causes or to any duties other than the awesome duties of this office, the presidency of your country. Accordingly, I shall not seek and I will not accept the nomination of my party for another term as your president.